RadioInfluence.com. The future is now.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to a special Thursday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Frankie Vale on the drums.
And it's me, Beans. And yesterday we didn't record because we wanted to be able to talk about the Mueller hearing in its entirety rather than it be ongoing while we're trying to talk about it, right?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Did you listen to it?
I listened to about 45 minutes sporadically, and then I just waited for a couple of key highlights. I found the highlights I believe were key, and I spent the rest of my day working. But that I could never have done.
Listen to the whole thing.
No way.
How come?
Oh, no way. I understand the reasoning for listening to it for very specific exchanges and piling up whatever. But if you're casually listening to get a feel for what the approach from both sides are and what is going on, you can surmise what's happening real quick. There were very specific questions being asked about the chronology and the genesis of this investigation from the Republican side. They were going from all of the Papadopoulos exchanges to Trump Tower to Fusion GPS. They touched on everything. They went everywhere. And what were Democrats talking about the entire day? Don McGahn.
Don McGahn and obstruction. I know. Every question was Don McGahn.
All day. And the one thing they thought they got with Ted Lieu, that idiot, and the DOJ policy on not indicting a sitting president was then pulled away from them after they came back from break. So seriously, it was 5 hours of trying to convince people that Donald Trump, thinking about doing something he was legally allowed to do by firing Robert Mueller, was the smoke, the gun, the fire, everything. I had to turn it off.
So let's get into that a little bit, shall we? The whole firing of Mueller thing. So there was conflicting testimony about this, because remember we did the whole analysis of the Dowd interview with Byron York, which was like massive. Mm-hmm. There was Dowd interviews with Byron York for an hour and talks about the relationship between him and the special counsel's office and, you know, what they dealt with and the communication back and forth, and everything was peachy and they were, you know, respectful of one another and all of this. And the fact that he was adamant that never once was the line from Trump, we need to get rid of this guy, we need to fire him, we need to tell him to pack it up and go home. And the communication between President Trump and Dowd, who was his private attorney, his personal attorney, not White House counsel McGahn, who was a swamp rat of the highest order, in my opinion, was always give him everything he needs. Don't hide anything from him. Let him have access to every single witness, to every single document. They handed over millions of pages of documents. The entire reason why Papadopoulos was in the trouble he was in was because the White House provided emails that discounted what he told them. Remember that. A lot of people, you know, forget that little minute detail. And Trump to this day disputes ever telling McGahn to fire Robert Mueller. He says it never happened. There were discrepancies in, you know, him saying, I really would like them to take a look into the conflicts of interest that Mueller may have. And we touched on this on Monday's show. But they never talked about firing him as per Donald Trump. As a matter of fact, him directing McGahn to put out the press report saying it wasn't true, in my opinion, adds credence to the fact that they didn't ask to fire him. That's one point. Separately from that, firing an investigator does not end an investigation. So even, let's say, Trump wanted Mueller to be fired for whatever reason he had, that didn't mean that the special counsel would cease to exist. It just meant that Mueller wouldn't be running it. Mm-hmm. So the entire argument on obstruction is just, it's the last thing the Democrats had to hang their hat on in some kind of cockamamie horse manure like impeachment proceeding they were hoping for. And the reason why they want an impeachment proceeding is to stop the investigations that are ongoing right now, to get somebody else in there to try and stop the investigations into all the stuff that went down. And that's the only reason why they're this desperately pushing for it. It's ridiculous at this point. It's utterly ridiculous. There were not even any sound bites that the left could use out of this hearing. Not one. Nope. He was a muttering, bumbling old man, and it hurt me to watch. It was painful to see. I don't have any sympathy for Mueller. He's not been this upstanding, great. He served his country, and I think that's noble and everything. But just because you're a veteran who served the country doesn't mean that you get to then be absolved of everything that you do or have done.
Yeah.
And I had pity because it was clear that he was useless up there. And I don't know how he felt afterwards or if he even realized how useless he was. I mean, he called President Trump "Trimp" at one point.
Yeah, well, he has to know. Everybody knows when things didn't go right, things didn't go well at all. It was bad. And you know, going back to Don McGahn, I brought up a point last night. I tried to remind the audience of something that I was making a point to point out every couple of months. From 2017, especially from 2017 throughout 2018, how every couple of months, maybe every 6 to 8 weeks, there would be this spat of reporting from everybody, from Fox News on down, all talking about Donald Trump. He better not fire Mueller. The Donald Trump, just pretty much putting it out there. Donald Trump, Mueller, fire. Don't do it. What would the consequences be if Trump fired Mueller? Yep. Every 6 to 8 weeks, no matter what network it was, they were talking about what the consequences of Donald Trump firing Mueller was. It was predictive programming, and it was a lame attempt at reverse psychology. They, as much as they're also clutching at pearls with the idea of Mueller being obstructed, the only way they would have ever had a real chance at getting the kind of support for impeachment that they wanted was if they actually were able to get Donald Trump to fire Mueller. Even though it was not illegal for him to do it, it would have created bad enough optics to go and run with it, and they didn't get it. And now here we are in 2019, everything is said and done, and all they are left with is, oh my God, Donald Trump may have been thinking about doing something he was legally allowed to do. Oh my God. And no, even though it's an eight second exchange between Mueller and Doug Collins put everything to bed, was your investigation curtailed or halted or stopped in any way? No. Over.
Yeah.
Done.
I mean, what did he obstruct at that point? What the heck did he obstruct if the answer is no? And there, I have a bunch of clips to listen to. And, you know, before the Mueller hearing, everybody was like, what questions should we ask Mueller? What questions should be asked of Mueller? And I have to be honest, I think that the questions that the Republicans asked were absolutely perfect. They were everything that I would have asked if I was standing up there. Like, they really, the only thing they didn't hammer home, and I'm not surprised, and the more this happens, Frank, the more I'm getting convinced it's going to be swept under the rug, is the whole DNC server thing.
Yep.
It's just, the only way that we can make this an issue is, unless they're holding it back because they're working with Assange in some way, which we don't know, that's like the last hope that we have that the truth will come out about the DNC server.
Well, perhaps it's that, but that's the one thing I noticed there too. The only thing that nobody is touching, nobody's touching, is the DNC server again. And at this point, knowing that Roger Stone is out there and Ed Butowski's out there and Ty Clevenger is out there, and we still don't know what's happening with Julian Assange, I will bite my tongue for now.
Yeah.
Because there's more than 1,000 ways to skin this Russian collusion cat.
We need to make sure, if it comes down to it at the end of the day, Frank, that we are loud about that, because, you know, half the truth or even 90% of the truth is just not enough. It's just not with something this important. It's too important. This is
No, because it could, because you, it's not enough, because if you still assign any blame to Russia,
yep,
then it, you still justify all of the posturing that the establishment over here in the United States government has runs out there when it comes to being suspicious and putting a damper and examining foreign affairs through the lens of this really this Cold War redux mentality,
yeah.
Which, listen, I am not trusting of anybody out there. First of all, we spy on all of our allies, and our allies spy on us. So to suggest that we should be trusting of the Russian Federation is ridiculous. But as far as what we're doing here and this crazy denial of how every election has foreign influence involved in it, whether it be overt or covert, and that just because there is a level of this that in existence year in, year out, that you say, all right, well, we need a fall guy. Let's just go take what we usually ignore and blow it up into something that is just so huge we can use in some kind of a way or whatever. That's ridiculous right there. The importance that they have assigned to Russia's meddling in 2016 needs to be destroyed.
No, I'm with you. That was the perfect explanation of it. And it, like, the entire story hinges on this. It is the entire story, you know, separate from Papadopoulos and Mifsud. And there's a bunch to talk about there that we'll get into today. It's going to be a Mueller day and a Spygate day. But, you know, that's the crucial linchpin of this. Not Seth Rich per se. Well, actually, maybe, yes, yeah, Seth Rich per se, because just... there's so much here. It's just frustrating to me. I can't even get my words out because it needs to come out. It needs to come out. I just did an interview this morning. It was really, really good, where I was asked about the Andrew McCabe OIG report where Loretta Lynch threatens the New York field office in the Eric Garner case. Remember?
Yes.
That story to me was, I mean, it's so important, and I've never been able to tell it to an audience of more than what's with me out on Twitter. And it just got blasted out all over the radio. So the more we can continue to talk about these facts and the truth and what actually happened, provable facts, the more we can, you know, inform the public about this, and hopefully we can bring public, you know, opinion around to be supportive of just getting the truth out there for once in this damn country. Can we just have the truth, for goodness sakes? Sorry.
Yeah.
All right. Let's hit some clips, shall we?
Sure.
Elise Stefanik had a really good series of questions. And she was actually the one who got James Comey to admit that he hadn't talked to any of people in Congress about the investigation going on into Trump at the time. Back in the day, he said, oh, it was of too much importance to talk to anyone about. And she was like, well, this is why we're here. You're supposed to tell us about these things. Let's listen to this.
As special counsel, did you review documents related to the origin of the counterintelligence investigation into the Trump campaign?
On occasion.
Was the Steele dossier one of those documents that was reviewed?
And I can't discuss that case.
I'm just asking a process question. Have you read the Steele dossier?
And again, I'm not going to respond to that.
Wow.
You were tasked as special counsel to investigate whether there was collusion between Russia and the Trump campaign associates to interfere with the 2016 election. And the FBI, we know, has relevant documents and information related to the opening of the CI investigation. Were you and your team permitted to access all of those documents?
And again, I can't get into what we collected, what we're doing with investigation materials.
He basically answered all of her questions that way. He wouldn't even say if he personally read the Steele dossier. And I can tell you that if the answer he gave earlier in the day, that he had no idea who Fusion GPS was or who Glenn Simpson was, is true. The Steele dossier didn't play a part in this at all, or Mueller, like we think, had nothing to do with this investigation. They had him locked and chained down in a basement somewhere in D.C.
The entire thing congealed in a gutter. It came out of nowhere. There was no origin. There's no origin. There's nothing.
Insanity. It's insanity. Some of the answers that we got yesterday, and that's why we're going to keep going through them.
It's insanity to say that I can't talk to you about whether or not I read the dossier that anybody can go and read right now. Why can't he say that he read the dossier? You can go and download, what is it, 37 pages right now on anywhere?
He did not answer any questions. He said, it's not in my purview 250 times throughout the day. It's not in my purview. It's not in my purview. Go ahead.
No. We're talking about purview. You're talking about purview, and then you start wondering how Paul Manafort ended up in solitary confinement.
Well, it's funny because I have a clip from Gates where he basically alludes to that very thing.
Paul Manafort, he committed crimes 10 years ago. Then I guess everybody has to serve their time. Then it still doesn't address the fact that almost everybody in Washington, D.C. are guilty of those crimes. And it also doesn't address the fact that if we're going to be bringing up what was in Robert Mueller's purview over the last couple of hours, that's the big phrase now that we're analyzing here. How the hell does Paul Manafort end up in solitary confinement for unrelated financial crimes a decade before? How is that in your purview? Even if you recommended he be charged by somebody else, or you outsource that prosecution, I don't. It's so ridiculous.
You know, it's crazy because here we go. Let's listen to the Matt Gaetz clip right now. This is one of them that really blew me away, where he talks about that very thing. Here we go. Hold on.
Can you state with confidence that the Steele dossier was not part of Russia's disinformation campaign?
No, as I said in my opening statement, building of the case was predated me and by at least 10 months.
Yeah, I mean, Paul Manafort's alleged crimes regarding tax evasion predated you. You had no problem charging them. And matter of fact, this Steele dossier predated the attorney general, and he didn't have any problem answering the question. When Senator Cornyn asked the attorney general the exact question I asked you, director, the attorney general said, and I'm quoting, "No, I can't state that with confidence. And that's one of the areas I'm reviewing. I'm concerned about it, and I don't think it's entirely speculative." Now, if something is not entirely speculative, then it must have some factual basis. But you identify no factual basis regarding the dossier or the possibility that it was part of the Russia disinformation campaign. Now, Christopher Steele's reporting is referenced in your report. Steele reported to the FBI that senior Russian foreign ministry figures, along with other Russians, told him that there was, and I'm quoting from the Steele dossier, extensive evidence of conspiracy between the Trump campaign team and the Kremlin. So here's my question. Did Russians really tell that to Christopher Steele, or did he just make it all up and was he lying to the FBI?
Let me back up a second, if I could, and say, as I said earlier, with regard to Steele, that's beyond my purview.
No, it is exactly your purview, Director Mueller, and here's why. Only one of two things is possible, right? Either Steele made this whole thing up and there were never any Russians telling him of this vast criminal conspiracy that you didn't find, or Russians lied to Steele. Now, if Russians were lying to Steele to undermine our confidence in our duly elected president, that would seem to be precisely your purview, because you stated in your opening that the organizing principle was to fully and thoroughly investigate Russia's interference. But you...
Not only that, but to say that predated me.
Yep.
That's like going in and being charged with the task of investigating a murder, and you don't want to talk about whether or not you looked at crime scene photos during the course of your investigation, because it predated your involvement with the case. That the crime scene itself predated your involvement with the case. I don't care that I'm just a little drummer boy from New York.
Aww.
I don't care that I have not spent a day of my life in a courtroom, or that I haven't done any. This is just comic book nonsense, common sense. If you have two brain cells, to rub together. This should not make sense to you. And you shouldn't have to go to a special educational institution to understand it.
No. And, you know, I bring this point up often, Frank. It's that, you know, looking at, let's pretend for a minute that all of the things that happened are true. In other words, like, let's pretend the FBI was completely befuddled by all this and they did think that the Steele dossier was actually real, like they say. And they did wonder about whether or not the Russians were interfering in the election and that did think that Donald Trump was tied to the Russians somehow. That is a more telling indictment on our intelligence community in this country than anything else we could possibly imagine. That if their story that they've been trotting out in front of us for years now is actually true and they really did believe those things, we are in a world of trouble. Because like you said, two brain cells to rub together. I am a mom with, you know what I mean? Like, I and you, little drummer boy, are just two regular people out here, and we can smell this crap from inches away or miles away.
You know what it is? Everybody has, there has been a great deal of comparisons to what we're going through right now in this new media revolution to a second American revolution, one that is being fought without a shot being fired. And I'll tell you something, looking back at the first American Revolution, then seeing how it was your everyday farmers and dock workers who showed up with their muskets and pitchforks and their rapiers to go and try to make a change. People who were not trained infantrymen and professional fighters or anything like that. It's the same exact thing. Same exact thing. And thank God for it, because if Robert Mueller is trained at what he does, my God.
There was another good one we'll go to. It's Ratcliffe. It was long, but it's important. I don't know if you caught Ratcliffe's clip by chance.
Ratcliffe and what's his name from Ohio? Mike Turner. They both went in very thoroughly on the idea of exoneration. It was good.
Yeah. Yeah. The idea that you are presumed innocent as an American. All Americans are.
Yeah. There is no verdict. Innocent verdict. There's only not guilty.
Because you're automatically assumed to be innocent. Not because it's somebody's job to exonerate you beyond a shadow of a doubt. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So. Here we go.
The report on the bottom of page 2 of volume 2 reads as follows. The evidence we obtained about the president's actions and intent presents difficult issues that prevent us from conclusively determining that no criminal conduct occurred. Accordingly, while this report does not conclude that the president committed a crime, it also does not exonerate him. Now, I read that correctly?
Yes.
All right. Now, your report... And today you said at all times the special counsel team operated under, was guided by, and followed Justice Department policies and principles. So which DOJ policy or principle sets forth a legal standard that an investigated person is not exonerated if their innocence from criminal conduct is not conclusively determined?
Can you repeat the last part of that question?
Yeah. Which DOJ policy or principle set forth a legal standard that an investigated person is not exonerated if their innocence from criminal conduct is not conclusively determined? Where does that language come from, Director? Where is the DOJ policy that says that?
Now he's reading.
Let me make it easier.
He's looking into his binder of the report that he's never read until today.
Yeah.
And trying to find something. I don't know what you're looking for in there, Mueller. What are you looking for?
What page are we on? What page are we on?
I
kept saying, what paragraph? What paragraph?
No, just a couple of my favorite parts of this, like things that I took away from the whole hearing. We'll go back to the clip in a second. But from the hearing as a whole, were Democrats would ask him a question. He would respond and say, is it in the report? The Democrats would say yes. And he would be like, then yes, it's true. Literally. Is it in the report? Is it in the report? Yep, it's true. Is it in the report? It's true. That's exactly. And you know, the other thing that people would ask him a question, is it true that blah, 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 blah. And he would be like, true, true. Just like a robot or like somebody had a controller behind the scenes that was like moving the freaking, oh my goodness.
Well, I don't know if you saw this. I know that you're not done with this yet, but I was watching a short clip of Rachel Maddow and Lawrence O'Donnell. Do you see this?
No. Can you send it to my Twitter DM so I can play it?
Yeah, pretty much what they're thinking, because there is no surrender for these lunatics. Hold on. Let me send it to you through the DMs. Hold on a second. Direct message. Nope, that's not who I wanted to send it to. This should be easier. You would think this would be easier.
No, they changed the way they did. Twitter just decided they were going to do an upside down world and they've messed everything up.
Oh, there you go.
Okay. There it is.
Okay, I just sent it to you. Take a listen to that. Pretty much and how it's highlighted and outlined in this tweet. Listen, okay, go play it.
We'll play it. Okay.
Okay.
Oh, come on.
And by the way, for everybody listening, the MSNBC lower third, it reads, Robert Mueller, Trump was not exonerated by report, But take a listen.
Our producer's going to kill me today with all the microphone bumbling and nonsense I've got going on. Hold on.
It's clear from his performance today that he definitely didn't do all this work himself. And there were times when clearly the report felt like the work of his staff and not his. And he was, you know, taking it for granted that whatever the member of Congress was reading to him from the report must be in the report. He didn't necessarily have in mind that he had the whole thing in his head. All the more reason for us to hear from the members of his team who did the work, particularly when the details of the work and the decision making behind it is really important in terms of what we still don't understand as a country.
All right, so stop. Pretty much that's all you need. Now the pivot for people, at least on MSNBC, is, all right, well, it's fairly obvious that Robert Mueller did not write this report himself. Let's start delivering subpoenas to everybody on his team to start asking the staff who actually did write it questions.
They spent years telling us how stoic and an integrity and utmost character. And if he was running the show, everything would be done by the book. Mueller was.
Yep.
And now
I had friends all over my town when I was still checking Facebook from time to time, especially when the last two Christmases rolled around. Please, Robert Mueller, bring me the present. You know, Super Mueller, and it's Mueller time. And now we need to talk to his staffers because he's obviously in there crazy.
Here we go. More of that other clip.
Principle. So, which DOJ policy or principle sets forth a legal standard that an investigated person is not exonerated if their innocence from criminal conduct is not conclusively determined?
Can you repeat the last part of that question?
Yeah. Which DOJ policy or principle set forth a legal standard that an investigated person is not exonerated if their innocence from criminal conduct is not conclusively determined? Where does that language come from, Director? Where is the DOJ policy that says that? Let me make it easier.
Go ahead.
Can you give me an example other than Donald Trump where the Justice Department determined that an investigated person was not exonerated because their innocence was not conclusively determined?
I cannot, but this is a unique situation.
Okay, well, you can't. Time is short. I've got 5 minutes. Let's just leave it at you can't find it because I'll tell you why. It doesn't exist. The special counsel's job, nowhere does it say that you were to conclusively determine Donald Trump's innocence or that the special counsel report should determine whether or not to exonerate him. It's not in any of the documents. It's not in your appointment order. It's not in the special counsel regulations. It's not in the OLC opinions. It's not in the justice manual. And it's not in the principles of federal prosecution. Nowhere do those words appear together because respectfully, Director, it was not the special counsel's job to conclusively determine Donald Trump's innocence or to exonerate him. Because the bedrock principle of our justice system is a presumption of innocence. It exists for everyone. Everyone is entitled to it, including sitting presidents.
That was masterful.
Yep.
It really was. You know, these are core tenets of our system here. And people, Can you, all right. To put it into perspective for like normal everyday Americans walking around out there who just don't understand that when you get arrested for something, you're not automatically assumed to be guilty of that thing. If they started policing, you know, or using that core value as the basis of the justice system in the United States of America, like these people want them to do for the president of the country, every single person who was arrested for any crime would be in jail for the rest of their lives. You get pulled over or you get put in jail for murder, you're automatically guilty until we can completely exonerate you 100% and prove that, you know, you didn't do anything. Do you want to operate that way, people, with the corrupt prosecutors that we've got running around here, roughshed? I wouldn't.
Nope. I don't.
I wouldn't want that. That's terrifying. One more, if I can.
It was everything that AG Reno warned against.
I can't agree with that characterization.
Okay. Well, what you did is you compiled nearly 450 pages of the very worst information you gathered against the target of your investigation, who happens to be the President of the United States. And you did this knowing that you were not going to recommend charges and that the report would be made public.
Not true.
Mr. Mueller, as a...
Now, he said not true. And he's right. Let me tell you why. He, throughout this entire hearing, said, and was asked about it multiple times, that he was operating under the assumption that he would be handing this report over to the attorney general because that's what the rules specify that he do, that it was not to be for public consumption, that he was supposed to hand it over to Attorney General William Barr, and then Barr could keep it to him. So whatever Barr was supposed to do was supposed to be a secret report, Mueller said. That blew the entire criminal contempt charge that the Democrats brought against William Barr to smithereens by their own witness. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Yes, it does.
And he maintained that throughout the hearing. And I got to say, too, a lot of reporting, rumblings, whatever. Nadler went ape that Mueller got a letter from the DOJ that was instructing him to stick to what was in the report and not share anything outside of the report spectrum. But that's only be, and Nadler was like, look, they're interfering, blah, 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 blah. The DOJ is trying to taint the witness. And he went all nuts about it. But at the end of the day, they got Barr, and Barr said, Mueller asked me for that letter.
Yeah, this is the thing that was really interesting to me when I heard about that letter, because I'm saying to myself, obviously it doesn't matter how it is. You're talking about vultures. I mean, they're not going to waste any part of the corpse. So it's either this is just protocol, and Mueller went and got in touch with AG Barr and said, okay, what are the rules here? Well, how should I act at the whatever, blah, 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 and got his instructions. And there Jerry Nadler said, okay, well, I have to react to it somehow. What's the worst thing I can say? Or if it's not protocol to ask AG Barr, just ask him anyway, so that no matter what comes back, you could say that AG Barr's advice is obstructive in some way. Either way, it's hilarious.
It is. It's nonsense. And so, you know, rather than play clips, I have a bunch of stuff that I put in a thread that I was like listening to this live yesterday. And I was threading the things that stuck out to me as I was listening to it live. And I want to go through some of those with you. And I know, Frank, that you find this like, and I'm not trying to speak for you, you can correct me, but I know you find this monotonous and like useless in a way, because it is, but it's not at the same time. So like, I don't want to bore you. So if I'm boring you, tell me and we'll swip it up. We'll swap it up.
Well, I'm along for the ride, Tracy. Okay.
All right. I care about you, Frank, little drummer boy. I do.
Yeah, well, hey, I know there's people out there that want to make sure that they digest every little bit of this so that when they go out into the world, if they get stuck online at the AMP behind someone who knows who thinks they know what they're talking about, they can put little jabs out there, say, nah, that's not the way it happened.
Mm-hmm.
Nah, no, it's not.
AMP, that's old school.
Oh, yeah. Or what do you want me to say? Finest? D'Agostino's.
D'Agostino's. You know what I listened to this morning?
Edwards.
You know what I listened to this morning with my kids?
What?
Crazy Eddie's.
Oh, God. That's one thing I've only ever heard of. I never actually seen a Crazy Eddie's.
I'm going to tell the story because I think it was just the metropolitan area up here that this happened. There was this guy, Crazy Eddie. He owned this like TV electronics store back before it was cool. And the commercials used to come on all the time. And it was that he was dressed up in a Santa suit with a hat on. Google, YouTube it, Crazy Eddie's. And the commercial would come on and he would be like screaming, like acting like a lunatic. And then at the end, he would be like, with prices so low, it's insane.
It is. It's insane.
Sorry.
Never. You'll never find a head of cabbage this lowly priced.
It was televisions, Frank.
Oh, really?
Yes, it was electronics.
Oh, see, like I said, I've never been in a Crazy Eddie, so I don't know. I just only heard it.
They flash the number up on the bottom of the screen.
I know Autoland.
Autoland.
Autoland. 1-800-AUTOLAND. Screaming. You know, that the era of the screaming used car salesman commercial is actually gone, right? Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
It's gone. Hey, I'm actually sad.
They were quite something to watch. You remember Cars for Kids before they switched up the jingle?
No, thank you. I don't want to think about it anymore. That was every other commercial on WFAN when I'm listening to my sports talk.
1-877 Cars for Kids.
Awful. Awful. It's even worse listening to the kids sing it. But when the cowboy comes in, 1-877 Cars for Kids. It's like, stop it. Now I'm not getting, I'm bringing my car somewhere else now.
There was only one other one that we'll talk about real quick. It was Cablevision. It was the Cablevision 877-393-4448.
I remember that one. That was awful.
Whenever they used to play that, my kids would turn and stare at the screen, mesmerized by the little dancing like Muppet figures that they had. And then they sang it all day. Okay, enough about that. That was a nice little interlude. Back to Mueller.
Yes.
Okay, so I have a bunch of things here. There was a point in the hearing where they started rapid firing out all of the things that I wanted to hear. Mueller says all the time throughout the hearing that the Russian government is implicated in computer crimes, right? In terms of, you know, the influence campaign that they ran and the hacking. But Concord just completely rebuked that, and Mueller apparently forgot to get on board with the fact that he's not allowed to say those things anymore. So he might be in some trouble because they can't prove it, and that case is still pending, and anything he says to the contrary there taints the jury pool. So it may end up being that this entire case gets thrown out because the jury is so tainted by disinformation that's unproven that they can't reach a verdict in a fair way. How monumentally crazy is that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the judge is saying, shut your mouth about this that is not proven because you're tainting a possible jury of, you know, that can come in and hear this case, and you're biasing the jury before the facts are out and you haven't provided the facts. The government is sabotaging their own case by lying about the connections. It's I know it's complicated. I mean, it's hard to like get it straight, but am I doing an okay job explaining that?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
It's insane. It's insane.
It is. Sorry. This is crazy Mueller's investigation.
With information so bad, it's insane. Okay. Crazy Eddie. So the next thing that I found was that this is the same thing that the left did when it came to the Cohen hearing. They would bring up Felix Sater and say he was a Russian mobster without telling anybody about his connections to U.S. intelligence. By the way, The Intercept just published an article about Felix Sater that they have been fighting to get a bunch of his court proceedings unsealed, and they are going to unseal those things. So we're going to learn a lot more about Felix Sater's interactions with the government. Because they've been on, yeah. Mm-hmm. And the judge, one of the things he said was, because Sater is all over television talking about how he was an intelligence asset and everything else, well, now the public has a right to know, where before he was undercover, so to speak. And and the public didn't have a right to know. Anyway, so just like Felix Sater, they threw out Konstantin Kilmenik. And they said Konstantin Kilmenik is a Russian asset or Russian intelligence person who Paul Manafort sent polling data to and sensitive campaign information. And we talked about this at the time. Konstantin Kilmenik met with the State Department right after a meeting with Paul Manafort. And then we didn't know at the time that we thought that he was a State Department asset, but it came out later in emails that he was working directly with them throughout this entire thing. And then I started saying, why the hell is Paul Manafort who handing this polling data over to someone that he knew what he had to have known he was an associate of his forever? I'm telling you right now, I know that people think this is crazy, but I'm not discounting the fact that Paul Manafort could have been involved in this whole mess too and just took it on the chin bad. Because he had to have known. And why else would you give it to the State Department, the actual polling from inside of Trump's campaign?
Mm.
You know, you want to give them a heads up about what's really going on. You pass it through Kilmenik and he gives it to the State Department, who gives it to Clinton or whoever, because they weren't getting accurate polling numbers. Because nobody was answering them. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
When they were polling, when they're polling, nobody's answering. People are afraid, right? They're not giving honest answers. So they're not getting honest polling. And, you know, that coupled with their hubris of not wanting to admit that the polls were obviously wrong when 90% of the people being polled are saying they're voting for one person and not the other. You'd think Rich Barris would tell you that would flag you as some kind of a problem, right? Well, Manafort was working the campaign and starts handing the internal polling data from the Trump campaign over to Kilmenik, who then does what with it? Why would he need it otherwise? Just saying.
Always bring it to a new level. Always bring it to a new level, Tracy.
It just sucks.
Yeah, no, it does. But there's so much. As this died on the vine a long time ago. But we're still dealing with people. I just wish that we can put people like Rachel Maddow and Lawrence O'Donnell on their own little rehab island. I don't want anything bad to happen. I mean, obviously, because they haven't. They're sick individuals.
Yeah.
And I have sympathy for sick people, but I don't think that they should be allowed to continue to drag the entire country through this and put this kind of ideas in people's head. Because obviously they're sharing the same brain as those who are occupying seats in Congress. So they're all thinking with the same hive mind there. It's not exactly like one is separate from the other. When they have these conversations on television, somebody's getting ideas out there. I just wish that we could find them their own island and you'll put seesaws and little therapy gardens. Coloring books, therapy gardens. You know, I think that she would be really good, Rachel Maddow. I think it would do her a lot of good if she were to be put in charge of, you know, some peppers and cucumbers. And it'd be like something she did. Like, that's hers. She did that.
Some people did something.
Yes.
So what would happen if we took Maddow and put her on the island? Because she's part of a hive mind, do the rest of them have to follow her there? Like,
I don't know, but maybe.
Like Stranger Things, if you get rid of the host, the rest of them die?
I don't know. Maybe around the holidays, she can send postcards to all of her friends and there can be a picture of her like on a rocking chair and she's smiling and she looks happy and she's cradling a gourd like it's a child. She's like, look. Look, I grew my own gourd just in time for Thanksgiving. Come on down here. I feel great. I'm doing great now.
Speaking of which, before we move on to some of the other things that I found in here, I have to say that there were a lot of people out there who did not agree with Maddow's assessment. You know, they had to kind of move their shift. They have to shift their coverage from Mueller and then, you know, dismiss him as not involved in the investigation and then move it over. But like a lot of people came out yesterday and were not on board with this at all. Here, let's listen to something here. This is MSNBC's Jeremy Bash. Let's listen to what he has to say.
I have to say that far from breathing life into the report, he kind of sucked the life out of the report. I thought he was boring. I thought in some cases he was sort of evasive. He didn't want to explain or expand on his rationale. He seemed lost at times. He was kind of flipping through the report, trying to find passages that members of Congress were reading to him. I thought it slowed things down, and I thought it really was a very ineffective defense of his own work. I don't think, by the way, he had to go after anybody or seem partisan or seem like he was doing anything more than a professional prosecutor would do, which was clearly and succinctly explain the evidence, explain the law, and show some passion, show some sense that the president's conduct here was concerning, that it violated some sense of what the Constitution says a president should do. So I fear that this hearing set back efforts to hold the president accountable for what the president did, and also hold ultimately Russia accountable for what they did.
Russia. Hold Russia accountable.
Yeah.
So
Russia
that's
accountable.
That's MSNBC, dude. And there's more.
But once again, sickos, because, all right, well, this hearing didn't go the way we wanted to. Is it because this entire story is nonsense? No. Robert Mueller was just a bad witness. The president needs to be held accountable for what he did still. And so does Russia, by the way.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I'm looking for one more clip to play where he couldn't figure out the collusion conspiracy difference. Here we go. Wait, hold on. I'm going to find it. It's here somewhere. Basically, they were going back and forth. Here we go.
For a term of art and
I think this is it.
Although your report states collusion is not so specific offense, and you said that this morning, or a term of art in federal criminal law, conspiracy is, in the colloquial context, are collusion and conspiracy essentially synonymous terms? You're going to have to repeat that for me.
That's not the right one. But that was most of it. Hold on. I got to find it. I'm going to pause this real quick. Hold on one second.
Okay.
Okay, sorry about that. I know you guys didn't notice anything, but I found the clip I was looking for. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Did you find there was no collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia?
Well, we don't use the word collusion. The word we usually use is not collusion, but one of the other terms that... and that fills in when collusion is not used. In any event, we decided not to use the word collusion in as much as it has no relevance to the criminal law arena.
The term is conspiracy that you prefer to use?
That's a conspiracy, exactly right.
You help me, I'll help you.
Thank you.
It's an agreement.
Wowee.
So,
wowee.
Wasn't that painful?
Yeah. It's hard to feel bad for everybody involved, but there's still always that level of pity.
I can't help it, Frank. And it's you know, I'm a human being, and I like to think that I'm a good person. And I'm watching this yesterday, and I know all of the nonsense and the garbage and everything. It's just that it was like the day that Nadler got sick at the table.
Yeah.
And it's just, they put this man through this. He's clearly not able to do this. Like, that hurts. It just hurts me. I don't know. Anyway, real quick, we'll go through a few more. We've got a couple more minutes left, about 10 minutes left. I had in my thread the Concord management thing, the Fusion GPS thing that we talked about. There were portions there where they talk about Kilmenick being Russian, and we can't talk about him being an intelligence asset. But people on the Republican side did bring that stuff up. There was a couple other points in here where they talk about Mifsud, and of course, Mueller can't talk about Mifsud. He doesn't talk about anything at all there. Then we got the second hearing and we got Adam Schiff, who now somebody tweeted like at the very end of the second hearing where Devin Nunes said, you know what, Mr. Mueller, thank you so much for your service to this country. Thank you for everything you've done. I have no further questions for you. I yield back my time. And someone said, like, when you know it's bad when Devin Nunes sheaths his sword.
Mm.
So he ceded back his remainder 4 minutes to Adam Schiff because he was so done going through the process of asking Mueller questions.
And once again, why? Why is it because Mueller just had a bad day, or is it because there is nothing to talk about anymore? There you go.
Well, that's, I mean, he couldn't answer any questions anyway. So, I
exactly.
mean, I think he made a point out of it. The other thing that happened in the hearings before we get to Schiff was that they literally asked him who wrote the letter to Barr. Was it you or your staff? I'm not going to answer that question. Who wrote your speech? Was it you or your press conference speech? He admitted it wasn't him that wrote it. So his press conference he gave, we knew that already. It was clearly not him that wrote it. He stood up there and it was the first glimpse we got into Mueller being inept and bumbling. It was the first.
Oh, yeah. He was unfamiliar with the words on the paper, too. He barely lifted his eyes from the paper. He was reading verbatim. There was no familiarity with whatever he was about to say. So, you know, it was coming from elsewhere.
Yeah. And Barr, again, I forget if we mentioned this earlier, that Barr gave him an out to be able to get out of this nonsense. Because I know that they've been friends and they've gone back, you know, years. It was talked about when Barr was confirmed. But Barr was saying that it was one of his staff that sent the letter over to him discounting what was in the report. And they attacked that in the hearing as well. The Republicans saying what was mischaracterized and Bob Mueller saying he couldn't answer. It was really literally like people saying, did da 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 happen? Was it in the report? Yes. Then yeah, it's true. Literally over and over again. And then they asked him about the discrepancy in the, you know, the Dowd test, the Dowd voicemail. Why did the voicemail say this and you admitted these words that made it appear as though there was obstruction of justice going on when the whole voicemail transcript is available? It's clear that he tells him not to include any of that information. And he was like, I disagree with the characterization. What is there to disagree with? Either you printed the entire quote or you didn't.
Yeah, but not like that. I didn't print it like that. What do you mean? I can't say. Wink, nod, wink, wink. Take what you want from that, sir.
Mm-hmm. And then Adam Schiff. Adam Schiff used Matt Gaetz's last minutes and his minutes to go on this huge thing about how Trump was guilty of collusion and he conspired with the Russians and no man is above the law. Very consistent theme yesterday. No one is above the law. No one is. Well, then that's great. I hope you remember those words in just a few weeks, friends, because there's a lot of people that operated below the law that you're surrounded with and they're going to be held accountable for their crap. Comey.
Oh, I hope. Well, now that we're at this point, I mean, I don't know.
Listen, Frank, Adam Schiff took a call from two people he thought were Russians with dirt on Trump and gleefully jumping up and down, basically asked for them to provide this information to him, this compromise about Trump acting inappropriately in a sexual manner. And it was a prank call and it was all recorded and he could barely contain himself. He colluded with Russians, Frank. He colluded with the Russians.
Or no. He was thinking about colluding with Russians. He was willing to collude with Russians. He had the intent to collude.
Of course, he didn't do it.
He should be in jail.
No, but you know what? The only reason why he didn't do it was because they weren't real people. If they were...
Exactly. No, seriously. I've said this too from the get go. You want to talk about more perspective? If the left, this isn't even really a left right thing, but if they really if I mean, they were willing to make stuff up to take down Donald Trump. You think that if they didn't have anything real at their disposal, they wouldn't have used it right now? You think that Vladimir Putin wouldn't have dropped all of his blackmail right now? If this was really real, and if Donald Trump was owned, they don't have anything. And the biggest proof of that is that look at how much time they have spent investing in the creation of something
that doesn't exist.
It's the most obvious thing there. They're willing to do anything.
It's sick. Let's do this. Let's wrap this up now and just go over a couple of the things that we're going to talk about tomorrow, because there's a laundry list of them. And I want to let everybody know, if you're listening to today's Dark to Light podcast, make sure you tune in to the Quite Frankly podcast tonight. What time? 7, right?
7 p.m.
Because I'm going to be in studio in flesh and blood next to Mr. Frank. He's allowing me to join him for his show tonight.
Yes, I'll open up my doors once in a while.
Once a year.
Once a year, I'll let some people into my fortress of solitude.
Into your sanctum.
Fine.
Thank you, Frank.
You're welcome. You know what? You're welcome. And it's only because it's your birthday week.
In addition, tomorrow, we're going to be talking about Jeffrey Epstein ending up in a fetal position on the floor of his jail cell yesterday, beaten. I don't know if you heard that yet, Frank.
Oh, yes, I have it all ready for tonight.
Okay, great. And then we're going to talk about the additional charges that were just slapped onto Nader in his case. There's also more information that's come out about Flynn, a bunch of information that's come out about Comey running a counterintelligence investigation of his own using a mole inside the White House. And there's a lot more that we didn't get to today because we covered this Mueller fiasco. So make sure you guys tune in, listen to the show.
You know, I also found a little something here.
Uh-oh.
That it may be that John McAfee he just might have been the person who brought his yacht out to Little St. James and did the drone piloting.
Shut up.
And it may just be why he's on the run right now.
Shut up.
People are listen.
I have no proof to back this up.
I have no proof to back this up except tweets and people exchanging information on the chans and putting together timelines.
No.
But he has been on the run.
Yes.
It's really interesting.
It is interesting.
I'm going to try to find more and talk about it tonight, hopefully.
Oh, my goodness. Everyone get your hats out.
Yes.
You have been listening to the Dark to Light podcast with
Frankie Val on the drums.
And Beans. You guys can hear us every, usually, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 p.m. Eastern on TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Apple iTunes, and RadioInfluence.com. We will see you very soon.
Later.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out RadioInfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.